Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Thousands of migrants are at the border trying to claim asylum before a new set of immigration rules begins in just about an hour. KCBS-TV's Michelle Gili is at the U.S.-Mexico border.
Nina Douglas from Chula Vista went shopping for baby supplies for the tiniest migrants who've come to the United States. She's handing out diapers, formula, and other necessities.
So there are children here who are not eating or drinking enough, and they're in unsanitary conditions.
Hundreds of migrants are waiting in a field on the U.S.-Mexico border in San Diego, near the Tijuana River. Some of the men and women and children seeking asylum have been here for days.
The government officially ends COVID-19 pandemic emergency provisions at midnight. CBS's Nicole D'Antonio explains the impact.
When health officials declared the start of the public health emergency in January of 2020, no one could have imagined that it would last for more than 3 years and that the virus would claim the lives of more than a million Americans. Some of the changes to our lives that came about as a result of the pandemic will go away now that the emergency is over. For example, the government will no longer buy up COVID tests and give them out free to all Americans. However, vaccines will remain free for practically everyone at least through 2024.
The White House says President Biden's meeting tomorrow with congressional leaders on the debt limit has been postponed to next week as staff talks continue. Charges will be filed against a subway passenger caught on video using a fatal chokehold on a fellow passenger earlier this month. CBS's Nora O'Donnell with more.
The Manhattan District Attorney announced that 24-year-old Daniel Penny will be arrested on a charge of manslaughter in the second degree. The Marine veteran says he never intended to harm Jordan Neely, who was homeless and had a history of mental illness, and he only acted in self-defense after Neely was verbally threatening passengers on the train.
Tensions are mounting on the teacher picket lines in Oakland. KCBS's Matt Bigler with the latest.
As striking teachers attempted to shut down a school district construction site.
You ready to send somebody to the hospital?
A worker in an SUV trying to drive through the picket line, albeit at low speed.
You're not endangering anybody's life. You're being ridiculous.
Fortunately, there were no injuries, but teacher Devia Faria says the confrontation was frightening.
I'm okay. I'm just trying to shake that off a little bit. That was not a union worker who crossed our picket line. That was the contractors.
The teacher's walkout is now in its sixth day with only 10 days left in the school year. Matt Bigler for CBS News, Oakland.
Chris Stapleton has won Entertainer of the Year at tonight's Academy of Country Music Awards. Lainey Wilson won Album of the Year. Leading nominee Hardy collected four trophies. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Looking for a career path with flexibility, great pay, and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. Is your check engine light on? The free Fix Finder service reads your check engine, ABS, and maintenance lights. It even sends a detailed report directly to your email. When you need to get back on the road, AutoZone's free Fix Finder service is here. Get the most complete free warning light report backed by technician-verified fixes. Only at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
See details at AutoZone.com.
This Entertainment Insider is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. After 8 years, James Corden is saying goodbye to The Late Late Show. What will he miss the most about it all?
More than anything, I'm just going to miss my friends that I've made here at the show. I'm going to miss the feeling of coming into this office every day and knowing that someone's going to make you laugh.
Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance.
It's time to turn Fridays into Fri-yays with WFHR.HiveOffDeal.com. You'll find deals for spots around town like restaurants, spas, and more. This Friday at 8 a.m., you'll save 50% on another great local business.
This week's deal is from Becky's Sugar Shack Bakery and Cafe. Get a $50 gift card for just $25. That's right, $50 for just $25. From sweet treats to five-star Italian beefs. Becky's Sugar Shack Bakery and Cafe in Adams Friendship.
Save this Friday at 8 a.m. at WFHR.HiveOffDeal.com.
Happy Mother's Day from WFHR and Village Gardens. Celebrate with us by tuning in to the morning show on Friday, May 12th for your chance to win a beautiful flower basket and a $25 gift card from Village Gardens. Make it the best day ever for the best mom ever from your friends at WFHR.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Adams County will hold a special Solid Waste Committee meeting on Friday, May 12th from 2 to 4 at Adams County Solid Waste and Recycling. They will discuss the bid submitted for the Cell 6 construction project and decide what action will be taken. The premiere of the 2023 Celebrate Red Art exhibit is tonight at Central Wisconsin Cultural Center. You can meet the artists this evening from 5:30 to 7:30 and view cranberry-related art plus other interesting subjects inspired by the color red. There's no admission fee to the event tonight at 2651 8th Street South. The Republican Party of Wood County is hosting a membership drive for young folks. It's at Robinson Park in Wisconsin Rapids on May 22nd, starting at 5:30 p.m. The representative from UWSP Young Republicans will be there, as well as Representative Scott Krug. They will have refreshments available. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy overnight with lows around 56. Winds out of the southeast around 5 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. Highs level off around 74. Overcast skies. 55 tomorrow night. Overcast. Low 70s. Saturday. Low 60s. Sunday with a chance for scattered showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 69.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
One joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin for the noon hour on this 75 degree.
It's a perfect day.
Thursday, May 11th. We're so happy you're here. And we're so happy that Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here for our weekly segment, the second week of this public cervix announcement. This is our segment where we talk about women's health and we take your questions both on air via text or during the week if you want to email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, how are you doing today?
It's 79 up here on the frozen tundra. 79.
Wow. I'm surprised you're not taking this call from outside.
I thought about it.
I really did. You're like, can I see my computer screen with the sun shining this brightly? No, dang.
Oh, it is so beautiful. And it's so great to be here with you talking about all of these things. There's so much happening in the world right now, especially when it comes to women's health.
Absolutely. And so it was interesting because I just, as the week went on, I was like, oh, we can talk about this. Oh, we can talk about this. And so to start that off, as far as women's health, regarding breast cancer screening, it is now recommended that women start getting their annual mammogram at age 40, which is before it was 50.
So it's been confusing.
Got it. This is why you're here to clear it up.
Because different organizations have recommended different things. So my organization, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, their guidelines have recommended starting at 40 and just kind of personalizing, tailoring care to what your patient needs. So every year, every other year, but that's what we've been going with for the past, I mean, for my entire practice, so over a decade.
You've been at 40.
Yes, we've been at 40, and generally I recommend every year. But, you know, part of the screening process is having a conversation with my patients about what are they worried about? What is their family history? What kind of symptoms do they have? This is all so personal and so individualized. And that's why these recommendations are great, but you are not a number. You are not somebody who just fits neatly into a category. So we can't legislate, and we can't just go with these broad recommendations when it actually comes to your personal health care.
And so when it comes to, as you said, your organization for 10 years has been saying 40, because as a layperson, I have heard that, you know, if you get breast cancer younger, it sometimes is more aggressive and harder to treat. And so does that play into this as far as getting a mammogram at a younger age than you previously thought, as far as catching it sooner, because sometimes it can be a more aggressive form of breast cancer?
That is true. We are seeing that more women, more younger women, are being diagnosed and have more aggressive disease, especially in the Black community.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's an epidemic. I mean, this is one of the biggest health disparities that we can point to and say we're failing here. So hopefully this change in recommendations will make a difference. And I should mention, so I said that there were different recommendations coming from different organizations. There's this giant organization called the USPSTF, the United States Preventive Service Task Force. They issue lots of guidelines, and this is the guideline that is changing. So they were the ones who said 50, but are now saying 40, and every other year-ish. They're still draft recommendations, so they're not coming out with their firm recommendations. But I think the point here is that the current recommendations don't actually suit us as individuals, recognizing that 1 in 8 women in this country will be diagnosed at some point with breast cancer. 1 in 8. This is not a small number. So whatever we can do to diagnose these earlier when they're treatable and make sure that we're preventing as much death and harm as possible, that's the goal of these new guidelines.
And Dr. Lyerly, you had mentioned medical history. Unfortunately, even if you have no history of breast cancer in your family, that's not going to give you a pass. That's why you need to go get your mammogram anyway, right?
That does not give you a pass. You're right, Jane. And actually, if you do have a history of breast cancer in your family, it's even more important for you to talk with your healthcare provider, because there may be genetic tests. There may be additional tests. You may need MRIs or ultrasounds or other things in addition to just routine screening if you have a high risk for developing breast cancer. So again, we have to individualize our care. One other really important thing to mention is that young women before menopause have pretty dense breasts, because we still have lots of hormones that are impacting our breast density. Pregnancy also impacts breast density.
I can attest to that right now. Like, whose boobs are these?
It's true. It's really challenging when pregnant women come in and they found a lump. What is the best way to evaluate that lump? It gets really tricky because you know, breast cancer does happen sometimes in pregnant women. So it can be tricky. It can be complicated. It really, really important to know that you have somebody who you trust, who you understand, who's taking care of you.
Final question on this topic. Who's working on making mammograms more comfortable? Shane liked
nobody.
That one. Nobody's nobody. Working on that. Nobody's working on that. No one's like, oh, let me like pancake your boob. No one's like, oh, maybe there's a better way to do this.
With all of the technological advances, they haven't come up with a better way to squish. I'm really disappointed.
No, the technology is getting better. Like, they can see more, and there are different ways to do. Like, ultrasound isn't as uncomfortable, but the standard is still squishing. Sorry.
Well, this is our weekly segment, Public Cervix Announcement, with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, where we take your questions about women's health. And so our next topic is ripped from the headlines. The U.S. is one step closer to getting its first ever over-the-counter birth control pill. So what do you know about that, Dr. Lyerly?
I love the name. I love that it's called the OPE pill.
OPE pill.
It's great. This is a medication that has been available by prescription for 50 years. We have so much evidence. We know it's safe. We know it works. And for people to just be able to go to their pharmacy, to Target, and just buy a birth control pill is incredible.
And so what I read, it's 90% effective, which is less effective than hormonal birth control.
So, let's talk about the bad parts. Okay. So it is hormonal. The typical, when you think of the pill, you usually think of a pill that has estrogen and progestin in it, two different hormones. This is the mini pill. People often know about the mini pill because we prescribe it in women who have just had a baby, because we don't want them to have the estrogen part. So it's just the progestin part.
Okay.
The downside to the mini pill is that it's picky. You have to take it at the same time every day. It is not forgiving. So the failure rate is higher because, I mean, let's be honest, our lives are chaotic and we forget to do things sometimes. So it's not as effective as the standard pill. But one of the great benefits is that it's safer than the standard pill because it doesn't have that estrogen component. So people who can't take exogenous estrogen for other health reasons can often take this pill.
So when you say, because obviously there's certain links to some women when they take, have been taking the hormonal with an estrogen pill for years, you know, it can screw with your mental health and your attitude. It can also lead to blood clots. Is that mostly the fault of estrogen? And so is this something that is maybe better in that way?
It is better if you're at risk for blood clots, if you're older than 35, if you're a smoker, if you have a blood pressure problem. There are lots of medical issues that can be problems for people who want the birth control pill. So estrogen is contraindicated. But if it's just this progestin, in many cases, people can take it. People who shouldn't take it, interestingly, people with breast cancer. But if you have breast cancer, you are probably plugged in with your oncologist and you are getting a recommendation about contraception because, you know, many young women still need contraception despite their breast cancer diagnosis. So it's really important to work with your oncologist in that situation. And then very importantly, people who have abnormal periods, if your periods aren't normal, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, but if your periods aren't normal, it's important to have that evaluated. It could be something as simple as a little hormonal issue, but it could also mean cancer. So abnormal periods always should be evaluated.
So as far as the process of, so basically an FDA panel approved this, the O pill, but we're going to call it the O pill. And so what are the next steps as far as where it is in the process of just being able to go to the pharmacy and get this?
That was an advisory panel. It goes to the full FDA this summer. So it could be as soon as this summer.
Wow. Which is a good thing, right? More options, more accessibility.
And what is the likelihood that the organizations who fought to overturn Roe versus Wade are going to come for this next?
Oh, did we?
Did we lose Kristen?
I don't know. I don't know.
She is speaking, but we cannot hear her.
We can. She is speaking, but cannot hear her. I don't know exactly what just happened. We just had her. But I will take this moment to make a call that if you have any questions, we still have another segment with Dr. Kristen Lierley. And if you have any questions about your health or women's health in general, 844-967-2789. You can text it in. You can call us in. That's 844-96-PARTY. And we will try to figure out what's happening.
We'll get her back.
We will get her back. We will figure this out. But can we go to break this early?
We can go.
All right, great. We'll be back in a minute. To sit and chit and sit and chit chat and smile. Don't send me no doctor. Filling me up with all of those pills. I got me a man named Dr. Feelgood.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. I was reminded of Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
I was reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Childhood
should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Parents make a lot of promises to their kids. We promise to be there every step of the way, especially on those wobbly first steps. We promise to always keep them safe. I mean, nothing's more important to us than that. And now, all kids 6 months and older can get a COVID vaccine. So we've got another way to keep that promise.
We can do this. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
To As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and it is our weekly segment, Public Cervix Announcement, where we talk about women's health and take your questions. And this week, of course, it's with just Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's back with us on the phone as we are having computer problems. But I actually got this email over since our inaugural segment last week, and I got this email that said, I just caught the podcast for yesterday's segment with Dr. Lyerly, and it was fantastic. Thank you. My OBGYN is retiring, so I'm navigating the search for a new doctor. She was a great resource for managing my PCOS and wondering if Dr. Lyerly could talk on it. It seems to be a common problem among women, but it's talked about so infrequently. I just think if I knew at age 18 some of the things I know now at age 34, I might have been able to manage some of the symptoms better. So I guess let's start from the top, Dr. Lyerly. What is PCOS?
I love this question so much because she talks about how it affects her now, but how it affects you really for your entire life. And PCOS truly is a chronic disease. It sounds like, I mean, the full name, it's an acronym for polycystic ovarian syndrome. So what do you think it is?
I would imagine it's something as far as cysts on your ovaries.
It doesn't have to be. That's
okay.
What's so crazy and confusing about this. So this is a really confusing chronic disease where the big problem is you have too many androgens. It's a testosterone that's found most prominently in men, but women have it too. So hyperandrogenism is the big thing that causes this disease. The confusion is that there are a number of different organizations that have diagnostic criteria, and they don't line up with each other, and they don't require that you have cysts on your ovaries. And actually, you don't even have to have your ovaries evaluated in order to receive this diagnosis. So that's one of the most confusing and ridiculous things about PCOS.
And so how common is it?
It's very common. So depending on the diagnostic criteria that you use, at least 7% of women in this country have PCOS. It's probably
wow.
more. And it tends to increase with the incidence of obesity. It kind of goes hand in hand with obesity. Most of the people who I see show up in my office because, like we were talking about earlier, they have irregular periods, and good for them. They come in to get it evaluated. We go ahead and do all of the regular stuff. We do a physical. We check their blood pressure and their BMI, and we measure their waist. And then we do a very careful evaluation to see if they have signs of hyperandrogenism or having too many of those male hormones, as well as insulin resistance. So having a lot of acne, especially acne on your chest or on your back, looking at hair growth patterns. So do you have a male pattern kind of baldness issue? And then another thing that you're not going to hear on anybody else's afternoon talk radio show, clitoromegaly. Sometimes people can actually have an enlarged clitoris because the clitoris is also in a man, it's the head of the penis. So that the size of a clitoris can be stimulated by having too much of this male hormone.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting, huh?
Super interesting. And so you just gave some of the symptoms, but I guess, is there anything else that people should be on the lookout for to know if they have it or they should go get checked out?
Yeah, like I said, it's typically people who have irregular periods who present with it. And then 80% of people with PCOS also have obesity associated with that. The key with this disorder is that it is a chronic disease. So we have to treat the symptoms and make sure that people understand the things that go along with it. It can affect your fertility. It can put you at risk for developing heart disease in the future. It can put you at risk for developing cancer, especially uterine cancer. And because it's a chronic disease that's often seen in young people, it is also associated with mood disorders, including depression.
And so to get diagnosed, though, is it as simple as just seeing your primary care doctor, or what is the, you know, what do people have to go through to see if they, this could be causing some of the symptoms they're dealing with?
You definitely want to see somebody who is familiar with PCOS. So maybe your primary care doctor, maybe an OBGYN. And it's like I said earlier, it starts with a physical, and then often we move on to labs. So we'll check your testosterone level. We'll do a bunch of other labs to rule out other causes of these symptoms, like check your thyroid and some other organs. And then we'll do diabetes and cholesterol screening, because those are two other chronic diseases that are really common in people with PCOS, if not when they're young, down the road. And the letter that our listener had submitted really highlights that, because diabetes and cholesterol tend to be things that develop, you know, age 40, age 50, but they can be present in young people as well. So knowing that you're at risk for these things can help you mitigate these issues by using a statin or using metformin or medications to control these chronic diseases early on before they end up causing and or get damage.
So once you get diagnosed with this, is this something that can go away, or is it something that, like, it's like diabetes? It's like once you have it, and then it just is the lifestyle and potentially medication you have to take to manage it.
Pretty much once you have it, you have it. But there are things that you can do to treat the symptoms and to just make it have less of an impact on your life. So, for example, it's not unusual for somebody to present because they're having a hard time getting pregnant because their cycles are irregular. So their body isn't tuned up and ready to bear a child. So for people who are dealing with fertility issues, we can do things like we can treat it with metformin. We can use fertility enhancing medications like letrozole to give them a better chance of getting pregnant. But that comes along with a whole other can of worms, because if you're using medications that increase someone's ability to ovulate, guess what else comes along with that?
Babies.
More babies, so higher risk of multiples, twins, triplets, all of that stuff. And in women with PCOS, we see a higher risk of pregnancy complications.
Dr. Lyerly, we actually have to let you go because we're going up against a break, but this went by too quickly. We will see you next week for public service announcement. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
WAU
on air,
online,
on your smart speaker,
and on the Civic Media app.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We all make promises, big and small, tested over time and distance, tried by circumstances and decisions.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I do solemnly swear to bear true faith and allegiance.
To help you when you're in need.
To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
To be considerate and caring. Courageous and strong.
For better.
For worse.
In sickness and in health.
To love and cherish.
To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partner.
Child.
Parent.
Neighbor.
One of our most important commitments is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting maketheconnection.net.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Lions Clubs and our surrounding area come together to donate annually to a district project. This year, the Wisconsin Rapids Lionesses were selected to choose a local project to receive the group donation. They selected the Wood County Critical Incident Stress Management Team. Clubs from Wisconsin Rapids, Grand Rapids, Nakusa, Port Edwards, Rudolph, and the Wisconsin Rapids Lionesses donated a total of $1,800 for the CISM team. This team supports the first responders within Wood County. They provide much-needed support following stressful responses to critical incidents within our county. Hobby Lobby may soon be opening in Stevens Point. The Stevens Point Journal reports the former Cops building on US 10 will be converted into a Hobby Lobby store. The crafting and art supply store plans to open in January of 2024. There will likely be a second tenant in the other part of the building, but no business has yet been named. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy overnight with lows around 56. Winds out of the southeast around 5 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. Highs level off around 74. Overcast skies. 55 tomorrow night. Overcast. Low 70s. Saturday. Low 60s. Sunday with a chance for scattered showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 69.
To local governments to be able to pay and fund things that they are responsible for providing to the residents of their town, city, village. And Governor Evers had a proposal in his budget, and the legislature in the last couple weeks has come out with what they think as a separate bill is the best option for shared revenue, and the bills are pretty different. And so we thought we would have Dr. Phil Rocco back on the show. He is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Welcome back. It's been a minute, Dr. Rocco.
Yes, it has. Always good to be with you. Hear the Candor and Ebb song before I come. You know, it's always good to come into cabaret. It's always fun.
It's never a bad way to start a segment,
yeah,
right?
Not
musical
at all.
Theater. It's hard to go wrong. At least that's our motto here. So you've written about this for the Recombobulation Area. I think you write a lot about this on Twitter. I think you think about this a fair amount as far as breaking down what's in this bill. And I know we're going to get to it. The legislature's bill comes with a lot of strings attached. But let's start with what was originally proposed in Evers' budget as far as something that was baked into that and what that looked like.
Yeah, so just some background here. The state has had this shared revenue program since 1911, right? So when the state in 1911 passed income tax and exempted some property from taxation, it basically said to local governments, look, this isn't a gift we're giving you because we're nice. This is because we're preventing you from raising money to fund services in certain ways, right? We're taking that authority. And so we're giving you back a share of your money. And basically through about 2003, with some different formulas, the state sort of updated that program as revenues changed, as populations changed. You got a growing share of aid along with those changes in your community. Since 2003, it's been stagnant. So what Evers did in his budget proposal was he said, look, we're going to give $576 million for this aid. We're going to use basically the same formula that we used to for counties, cities, towns, and villages. And we're also going to give most communities across the state, including Milwaukee. There's sort of separate provision for Milwaukee, but most communities across the state, the ability to hold a referendum and raise sales tax. So it's basically like a refresh of the system and then some. So that's the sort of Evers plan. The Republican plan is like the Evers plan in only one respect, which is that it does create some new shared revenue for local governments. But the way that it does it, the amount that it has, and all of the conditions that it attaches to it, including and especially for the conditions for Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, are really, really different. And so we can get into those, any aspect of that you want to.
So it's what I understand on the base, it's less money. And with that less money, it also comes with more strings.
Yeah. So to give you an example, so in Evers' legislation, there's $576 million for counties and municipalities. And about a little more than half of that, they can use it for whatever they want, right? There's a set aside portion just for public safety. Okay. So, but most of it is just kind of general purpose. Now with the Republican legislation, it's $277 million. So roughly half the size of Evers. But more than that, none of it is general purpose. The only reason you can use the additional aid is for public safety, EMS, and fire. And beyond that, there are restrictions attached to it. So,
and this isn't just for Milwaukee. This is for everyone.
For
everyone
that's
who's getting
everybody.
Money, it's like it's for public safety, fire, EMS. And then you're going to add to that.
And then there's some additional restrictions on that as well. So, for example, one of the big restrictions is you have to spend as much as you did last year, no less, on those services. But you can't ever reduce them, which is really weird from the perspective of, say, you gain efficiencies from something like having fewer sworn officers. You can't essentially spend less. And then there are some other criteria, some of which actually conflict with current Wisconsin law. So one of the things is essentially amounts to an arrest quota.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then there's a moving violation vehicle quota, which is like speed trap heaven. So like those are some kind of onerous restrictions on there. And then it sort of goes beyond that. Local communities can't have like advisory referenda.
Yeah.
It's banned. And then there are a bunch of additional restrictions that apply just to Milwaukee County and city. So essentially it's like, it's less money, but more strings. That's how I would describe it.
And so it's funny because, where do I want to go next? I have so many different questions, but let's first talk about, I know, but let's first go to Milwaukee and what the additional, because everything you just said, that's for everybody. That would be for all the municipalities and counties. What does it look like for Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, as far as additional restrictions?
Yeah. So for Milwaukee, now there's a small bright side here. So like Evers legislation, it gives Milwaukee County and City the ability to have like a sales tax referendum. So they can raise a little bit more money. But unlike the Evers legislation, it basically says you can only use that referendum money to pay off unfunded pension liability. So once that problem goes away, the only thing you can spend that additional sales tax money on, as far as I read the bill, is public safety. Okay, so that's a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
Then there's a bunch of additional restrictions. I'll just run through them. One is a set of restrictions on what you can spend the money on. So there's a cap on Milwaukee City's ability to spend it on arts funding. There's a prohibition. You can't use any local levy money on a streetcar. Then there are some additional restrictions. One, the Fire and Police Commission, which is Milwaukee's civilian oversight board for the police and fire, all of that power is transferred to the police chief. So no more, authority for that body. It still exists, but it's purely advisory. And then the other thing is for Milwaukee City and County, the bill imposes new voting rules on expenditures. So rather than just having a simple majority vote for raising revenue, you now have to have a two-thirds vote, which in Milwaukee Common Council, that's probably not going to be a huge deal. They have a lot of unanimous votes. But for Milwaukee County, that changes the political calculus significantly, and it gives folks who are from like more conservative parts of the county, it effectively gives them a larger veto over expenditure decisions. So, I mean, it penetrates down not just into like the fiscal part of local government, but the basic like political aspects of local democracy.
And so that. We're talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who's an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, and we're talking about shared revenue and the two bills that we've seen so far. One was in Evers' budget proposal, and one is been proposed as a separate bill by the Republican legislature. And I've said this before as we were talking about some of the social media curfew stuff of like, the party of personal responsibility and local control just feels so far from that right now, at least in our state. And it's just, it also just feels like everyone who's on the receiving end of this shared revenue bill. So League of Municipalities, different county executives, different mayors, it's this hostage situation where is this better than nothing and what we have now? So, right. do we dare criticize it that much in fear of getting nothing? Or is there anyone that you've kind of in surveying Twitter or other articles, like, is there anyone who's happy about the, is there anyone who works in local government that's like, this is a great bill?
I mean, you know, it's interesting when you look at lobbying stands on the legislation, you know, clearly the Wisconsin Towns Association, which represents the smallest towns really in the state. Now, one thing we didn't talk about is the formulas for the bills are different. So under Evers legislation, just rehabs the old formula. Under the Republican bill, there's basically an advantage for towns that are under 5,000 people. So you see some of the smallest towns in the state, like 43 people, they get something like a 5,000% increase in their shared revenue, which is, so like they like it, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Wisconsin Counties Association, I think, has basically taken the position that it's better than nothing. Within Milwaukee County, I think, you know, there's opposition to a lot of the restrictions, but this solves a big, I think, to the extent that the unfunded pension liability thing is a political problem for the mayor and the county exec, like this helps them out. So I think they're probably not thrilled with the local autonomy thing, but I think that it's in terms of their most immediate political needs, it might be seen as solving them. So, I mean, it's the question I think that is going to come down the line is if this is a take it or leave it offer, and Evers vetoes it, but then essentially goes back and they don't make too many amendments, which, you know, is possible. The question is, like, how are local governments going to deal with all of the the restrictions. And maybe there's a legal strategy there. I mean, it's quite possible that some of those restrictions conflict with existing laws and, you know, they have to take the state to court. I mean, that's entirely possible. I think the overall situation is this is a take it or leave it offer from a position of extreme power.
Yeah. That's exactly what it feels like. It's just kind of like, well, almost like there was potential, if you're being a cynic, that they purposely put poison pills in this thing so that they wouldn't have to do anything, knowing that either Evers would veto it altogether, which he has threatened to do, or, you know, it just doesn't give that much.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a limit on, it is hard to imagine a more restrictive version of quote unquote updating shared revenue than the one that they put in the bill. I think Jane said that you have a question.
We do have a texter.
We do. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Since the GOP won't give Milwaukee a fair share of revenue, but is willing to give 20% of the sales tax back, could the state not give the municipalities no increase in shared revenue, but instead lower the state sales tax to 4%, allow counties to have a 1% no strings attached sales tax for their own use?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that is distinctive about Wisconsin from other states, like you'll see other states have, they don't seem to share as much revenue with local governments as we do. But the reason for that is they allow local governments to do things like have an income tax and, large access to the sales tax. The distinctive thing about Wisconsin is that in addition to having this stagnant shared revenue formula for the last, two decades, we also don't give local governments access to a revenue mix. We force them to rely almost exclusively on property fines and fees. And, it's possible that they could come up with a different revenue mix that local governments could have. But it seems like that is even, in a way, if they're this bullish on restricting local autonomy in this bill, it's hard to imagine that giving local governments more control over the sales tax would be amenable to Republicans in the assembly, at least from what I can tell from the legislation.
Good idea, though. But right.
Interesting.
Dr. Phil Rocco will be here when we get back. If you have other questions about the shared revenue bill, where we go from here, 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Dr. Phil Rocco will be here when we get back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
If you happen to be rich and you feel like a nice entertainment, you can play for gay escapades. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring ting-a-ling for some mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover and you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht.
What?
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the world go round.
It's time to turn Fridays into Fri-yays with WFHR.HiveOffDeal.com. You'll find deals for spots around town like restaurants, spas, and more. This Friday at 8 a.m., you'll save 50% on another great local business.
This week's deal is from Becky's Sugar Shack Bakery and Cafe. Get a $50 gift card for just $25. That's right, $50 for just $25. From sweet treats to five-star Italian beefs. Becky's Sugar Shack Bakery and Cafe in Adams Friendship.
Save this Friday at 8 a.m. at WFHR.HiveOffDeal.com.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place, you know, that spot that only you know about, and instead of what you came for, you found something a little different? What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number, 1-800-662-HELP? What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral. Or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
Hi, I'm E.J. Williams. Each year, millions of animals are abandoned, and more than a million are euthanized before they can be rescued. Organizations like American Humane are working to harness the healing power of the human-animal bond, as animals can be trained as life-saving service and therapy dogs to help veterans, the elderly, and children with special needs to overcome the obstacles of everyday life. To find out how you can help give animals and the people they help a new leash on life, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
To As Goes Wisconsin, I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, about the shared revenue proposal or bill that is out there. And I guess to back it up a little bit, because I think people like you, me, we've talked about this on the show, but sometimes it is kind of a policy wonky thing.
Yeah.
So as far as why people should care and why this is important, how would you frame that?
All right. Think about a service that you depend on in your local, you know, community. Is that your parks? Is that your streets? Is that the street lights? Is it the kinds of cultural things that counties and cities do? Is it the Department of Health Services? Just like think about a thing that, you know, is it inspecting rental apartments and things like that. So think about something that, you know, obviously that takes money. Okay. And so then the question you got to ask is like, how does the government get its money? And in cities, we like to think about cities as if they're like islands on their own, right? Operating kind of autonomously. That's not really how it works. Like the state gets to decide a lot about what local governments can do to raise revenue. And right now, they basically said, look, you don't have sales, you can't do income tax, so you've got mostly property taxes, and we're also going to put levy limits on those, okay? So then the question is like, and then the rest of it, like the second largest revenue source behind property for local governments is state shared revenue. So it's like we depend on this because that's the setup, right? And so then the question is, when you're in that like liquidity trap and you've got, you know, some unexpected challenges come up, you got a pandemic or, you know, whatever, or the formula just doesn't update for inflation, you get a big surge in inflation, you got to pay for stuff. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how are you going to do it? And so what it looks like now, just in dollar terms, is like, if the state were to just update where we were in 2003 for inflation, we would add about $800 million to the budget for counties and municipalities for general aid. Evers comes close, $576 million. The GOP's bill is like a fourth of that. It's fourth of where we would be. And for cities, that especially cities that are like facing fiscal crises, I mean, that is a problem because we've also restricted their ability to do other kinds of things to raise revenue. So that's why it matters, right? Is think about a service you care about and need money to fund it, and then where's that money going to come from? And the state is really a big player in that.
Dr. Rocco, it just seems like the rhetoric on one side is all local control and local government, and we want you to, you know, it's things are handled locally, except when it comes to money, then it's all our money and we're going to decide what we want to do with our money.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's funny because we have some laws in the books going back about a century that sort of ensconce the idea of home rule, right? That governments get to decide and have some autonomy over what they're doing. That's like, you could say that's even like a genius of the Wisconsin kind of approach is like local communities. But I think that the trend that we've seen across a bunch of states, not just Wisconsin, is that increasingly local control for Republicans means preempting local governments and deciding things at the state level. And there are obvious kind of reasons for that, right? When your ability to decide things is kind of constrained by, you know, gerrymandering and a variety of other things, like deciding things at the state level can be really advantageous when you control those purse strings. You know, it's interesting, there's one other part of the legislation that's, you know, this $300 million innovation fund in the Republican bill, which is, by the way, larger than the, you know, general purpose aid or the aid that they're giving overall. But the thing is, it forces local governments to apply to the state and demonstrate that they're going to essentially privatize or consolidate services, which, by the way, people think privatization saves money. There's very little evidence that it does. In fact, when you privatize, you just create a network of contracts that are really end up being really costly to manage. So, but like that is just sort of a smidge of the logic, right? And the thing that is weird to me is, like, we're not talking about this legislation. I think to the extent that it's been talked about, it's like, well, this is a shared revenue bill. It's like an update to the old formula. It's like these two bills represent fundamentally different philosophies mm-hmm. about the relationship between local communities and the state and, like, who should decide. It's about power.
And so with the 3 minutes that we have left, where do we go from now? Like, what happens now? As we kind of said before, like, it seems like there's an option of, you know, it gets passed, Evers vetoes it, and if he vetoes it, I mean, could it just die on the vine entirely and just stuck with where we were last year?
It could. I mean, what's going to happen now is Assembly looks like they're going to pass this without amendment. It's going to go to the Senate. There could be amendments in the Senate. And then Evers could veto and it could go back and they could see if they, what it would take to, you know, get to a veto override threshold. And that might require some amendments, right? I think the fundamental thing here is that there are advantages to Evers' legislation, regardless of what kind of community you're in, blue or red. And I think that this is an issue that people are expecting is going to be obscure and not many people will be paying attention to. I think this is one case in which writing or talking or calling your member of the state Senate or state assembly on the legislation could actually move the needle, letting people know that you're paying attention. It's a really complicated thing,
yeah.
But just saying, look, we want an adequate level of aid, local control, and not all of these strings. And, aid that actually goes back to where it's needed, where, you know, you have people. I think those are some powerful arguments.
Well, maybe we can, maybe I'll make a TikTok. Well, maybe we'll do a call to action to let your people know that you are watching this because it affects everybody. All right. Well, Dr. Rocco, always a pleasure to have you on. Always love your insight and your brain on these topics. You working on a book right now or anything? What are you working on?
Always. I'm working on too many things. Okay. A book and a bunch of articles. The shared revenue thing has sort of taken over my life. So
that sounds fantastic. Sounds so fun.
It does.
Not what I asked for.
Not what you asked for. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you soon, friend. We're going to take a break
Take care.
Take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, what advice do you wish you would have gotten at your commencement speech? This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit al-anon.org.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5